Good to see you out there. Lots of people walking in this semi-rainy day. It seems to have opened up for us, Dave. The skies have opened for our show.
Yeah, just about 1 o'clock, when it was turning 1 o'clock, the sky was sort of kind of peaking.
I put the request in, that's why.
Oh, did you do the dance, the sun dance or something?
I did a little rain dance. Yes, I did. I did. Welcome to the show, folks. We have a phenomenal lineup today. All of a sudden, my voice got a little scratchy. I don't know why.
It's the time of the season, you know. There's a lot of phlegm season.
This is the phlegm season.
Yes, it is.
Yes. Yes. It's a very technical term. For
medical term.
Right. I think what Dave's alluding to is that with the rain comes the addition of mold that goes up and down, and your allergies start to go crazy, which I think that's what's happened to me. But I like it. It's a little raspy.
We're going to have to get you some hot tea or vodka. I don't know.
Vodka.
Okay.
Seems to work better than the hot tea. Excuse my scratchiness.
Probably faster.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I was talking about the show we got lined up. You know, if you follow me on Instagram or Twitter or Facebook, you see I kind of put out there, you know, every show. I just right before, I'm like, hey, this is what we got going on. And I always like to throw a little twist, something a little special into the mix here before we get to our lineup that'll continue all the way till 3 o'clock. I want to bring on somebody right off the bat, someone really special. I posted something about the Frank Fontana Award, which, you know, kind of goes in the line with the Wonder Woman segment we do. And this was an impromptu guest. She just kind of walked in off the streets. Leanne Marjorie is joining me right now. And Leanne, come on over. She's blushing right now. If you guys can go to WGNRadio.com/watch, and you'll see Leanne, and she's a phenomenal girl. She is actually here in the States right now. She's from the area, and you were born where?
In Chicago, Illinois.
You sound like me right now. What did you do? Did you bring this with you?
It's my 25th birthday weekend, so.
Oh, hey now. What'd you do last night?
We went out around River North, I think it was. So
any hot clubs you want to mention?
I don't really remember the names.
That's a good thing. Her mom and dad are sitting in the, and John's a very good friend and partner of mine. Yeah, good that you turned away on that one. I like that. So, Leanne, why I'm bringing you on, I mean, you wanted to come down here, check out, you know, the behind-the-scenes workings of a real professional radio station like WGN Radio. And there's nothing more iconic than WGN 720 here in Chicago. So we're honored to have you on. But you are a real special girl, and you do a lot of amazing things for our country. Leanne is our Wonder Woman today because she is an Army sergeant and she's a flight medic who served in Afghanistan. How long have you been in the military?
6 years in May.
6 years in May.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And you're saving lives. That's a beautiful, beautiful thing. What made you go into the military?
I was probably one of the last people that you would ever expect to join the military. I didn't really know what I wanted to do after high school. I didn't want my dad to pay for college and have me go party and waste his money away, so I just went to a recruiter, and he said something about medical and being a combat medic, so I did it.
Good for you. And in your opinion, was it the best decision you ever made?
I never regret it, ever.
Is this going to be a lifetime thing for you?
It might. Very well might be, because I love it.
Mom and Dad, you feel okay about that?
It's scary sometimes.
It's got to be scary. I mean, you've seen some action, huh? Leanne, I have a daughter. She's three. I mean, but the last thing I'd want to hear is, Mom, I'm going to go, or Dad, I'm going to go to join the military. And during a time where things are very turbulent, I mean, we have things going on all over the world right now as we speak. I mean, the recent terror attacks in London, does that send shivers through your spine? Like, what do you feel as one of our armed services who's protecting our country and our freedom? You know, and guys, if you were to see Leanne, you'd be like, oh my God, she's so cute. She's like, how could you want to, for a second, imagine her in harm's way? But she's doing it to save and protect our people. What's your feelings when you see things like that happening in London? Are you like, oh my God, I'm going to be called to something?
I think for anybody in the military, it kind of sends like a shockwave across anybody.
Yeah.
Because you never really know what's going to pop up next. And, you know, I could be here today or I could be whoever knows Syria.
Yeah.
In a month. We don't know.
And you're flying out tomorrow back to Honduras?
I'm actually flying to Texas.
To Texas tomorrow?
Yes,
and you're going to be stationed out there?
Yes. I did a tour in Honduras for a year, so I'm back.
Yeah. And she's not emotional. She just lost her voice because it was her 25th birthday. So, but I'm so glad, you know, John, your dad's a good friend of mine, and I'm a partner, and I'm glad he brought you down. I'm glad that at minimum myself, we, the country, could do something. And I know radio's been a passion of yours before you joined the military, and for, you know, for us to give you the opportunity to be here and experience an entire show behind the scenes is our pleasure. Thank you for what you do for our country.
Thank you so much for your support.
Well, you hang out. You can grab a seat. Yeah, oh, please. You rock.
Thank you.
And so you're going to hang with us. I might ask you to jump on here and there if you're up to it.
Goodness.
Yeah, because we have a great show. We have the folks from Architect of Chicagoland coming on. David Berryhill is the president of Architect here in Chicago. They do amazing decks, pergolas, gazebos, you name it, when sunshine starts hitting, or even winter. These guys have phenomenal product. And, you know, I don't know if you need anything right now, but your dad does a pretty good job at that. They do low maintenance decking, and it's just a great product. Go to their website. It's Architect. Of Chicagoland. Google them. Great company. At 2:05, we're going to be talking to artist Andy Kozlowski. He does these really eclectic portfolios. He's got a sculpted wall, pieces of metal art, wearable jewelry. He's going to be bringing a bunch of pieces for us to see, which, by the way, it is radio, but with today's technology, you can go to WGNradio.com/watch, and you guess what? You can watch our show. Right now, people are watching you, Leanne.
Good.
The CEO of Box Water, Ben Gott. You know, you ever see a Box Water? You see that? Like, if you go to Mariano's, that white box, it looks like milk carton, but it's water.
Yeah.
Ben's coming here. He created that whole
thing.
That's
awesome.
Yeah.
Can't wait.
You got one right there. Dave Miranda.
Oh, wow.
Dave Miranda is my from Wheel of Fortune. What's her name? Vanna White.
Yeah.
That's it. It was on the tip of my tongue. Dave, you are my Vanna White.
I feel like I need to show legs now.
Please do. I think Leanne would appreciate that on her 25th birthday. We don't know what you did last night, but hey, you can round it out. Welcome back to the Frank Fontana Show. We're rocking the mic till 3 o'clock here on WGN Radio 720. And I'm really happy to bring on my next guest because it's so in our wheelhouse. The company is Architect, of Chicagoland. And joining me is the president, David Berryhill. Dave, thanks for taking the time on a Sunday. I know it's a busy day, a family day. You got a couple kids, but thank you. I appreciate it.
No problem. I'm glad to be here, Frank.
Yeah, so tell me about Architect. I mean, I've heard the name. I've seen the work. I've been on the website. Beautiful stuff. How did you get involved with the company?
Thank you so much. We design and build outdoor living spaces, decks, patios, screen porches, sunrooms. My hobby was landscape design. I loved putzing around the yard, took some classes at the Morton Arboretum, just really enjoyed the outside space.
Oh, so you weren't like a passive landscape guy. You were like, I'm going to the... See, me, I'll you know, rake a little bit. But I won't go to the Morton Arboretum to learn about plants. I'm proud of you, man. That's big.
It was kind of fun. It's kind of fun. So I also had a little bit of background in construction. I'd owned some rental property, did my own work there. And so when I started looking for a business, Architect's a franchise. It's a national franchise, but it's pretty small. There's only like 50 businesses around the country who are part of the group. So it still's got a real family touch to it, even at the ownership at the franchisor level. And it just felt like a good fit.
So prior to Architect, you were running your own home remodeling company?
No, I didn't have a construction background. I was working for a couple different businesses, manufacturing, mostly sales organizations, and then operations.
So interesting. Jump to a field where, I mean, so you guys have the labor, you have the staff, you have the trades that go in there and do the installs for all the products. Is that how it works?
Yeah, absolutely. And we started really small, out of the basement, just really me the first year. My wife joined me a couple years later, and we've grown it from just the two of us. Now we have 10 people in the office and 14 crews in the field.
That's huge. Now back up for a second here, because I'd love to hear these success stories. So you said I started first. Then my wife joined me. Was the wife like, I don't know about this, Dave. I'm wondering here. I'm going to let you get at this first. And if it works, then I'm going to jump in.
No, to be honest with you, my wife, Kristen, has been just an amazing support. She was probably more comfortable from the beginning going into business on her own because of how she grew up and her dad was more of an entrepreneur. My father worked for the government. So I was used to that steady 9-to-5
so
job
mine.
Every day.
Yeah.
And but we had little kids, so her focus at first was taking care of them.
Yeah.
And hey, you get it started, and then as we get rolling, I'll join the team.
So why roll the dice on a franchise like this? Like, I mean, there's tons you could do. A Subway, you could do. You know, especially since you're not coming from a construction background, you know, it makes sense. Like, I'll just, you know, I'll open up a Jimmy John's.
Yeah, yeah. We looked at those. We looked at Subways and all kinds of scenarios. We just found that I really like the outdoors. I think it's exciting. And I had one of my criteria was if I ever have to do the actual work, you know, if someone needs me to pick up a hammer or move lumber, or I'd actually enjoy that. Now, am I a talented carpenter? No way. These guys are artists. I know what they should do, but if I tried to do it, it would take me three times as long, four times as long.
Yes.
But I moved plenty of lumber. I cut plenty of boards, and that never was a problem. And I wanted a business where I was happy to do that. If I need to strap on the tool belt and do it.
Is there occasions where you do?
Not as much anymore because we've grown, but those first 4 years, I moved lumber all the time and cut boards and did whatever you had to do. You know, that's part of growing a small business.
So what when you get into the franchise of Architect, what is it that you're getting into? Like, explain the product, explain why it's so fascinating.
Sure. You know, they're a great organization from a standpoint of teaching you how to build and how to design these products, these projects. Big part of their training was the design process, how to have a conversation with the homeowner to understand their real priorities, not just walk into their backyard and go, what do you want? Okay, here's a price. You know, yeah. We spend about an hour in our first meeting understanding function, understanding aesthetics, understanding budget, looking at the house and looking at issues to deal with.
It's a very personal subject.
Absolutely.
I mean, people take this, you know, you're in their homes and you're touching their stuff, you know, and you're adding to their lives. We find it, you know, very much an emotional, you know, journey when we design and build for people as well, you know, and you have to hold hands, you have to, you know, I always say it's like a marriage. I don't know how you feel about this, but it's kind of like
a short time. Yes,
it's
absolutely.
A mini marriage,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
And you gotta know your pros and cons and the faults and all that kind of stuff and be very transparent with all this stuff. So, you know, what's your process? You know, like explain to me like your therapeutic process when it comes to Architect.
So we get together with people, usually at their home. And again, we have that conversation where we try to understand how they want to use the backyard. What's their tastes? And we do that by looking at lots of pictures. Always talk budget because we don't want to come back with designing something. And as a designer, I'm sure you know,
yes.
It's really easy to be triple or quadruple what someone wants to spend. And that's
completely.
Wasting everybody's time. Once we do that, the next step is to get back together to show usually two designs. Ask which they prefer, and then we always assume that's a working meeting.
Wait, is it the designs, are they dream design versus realistic usually?
So we usually do a budget design
and
an everything design.
Yeah, yeah.
And what I teach our designers is always try to have that third concept buried in there, which is what do you think is really the design that's
in between.
Be right, that they're not going to spend for the everything, but the budget isn't quite enough. That's really what we want to show them.
Yeah, and you typically find when you do the you know the A and the B, it always lands somewhere in the middle.
Almost
right?
Always. That's exactly right. Yeah.
And budget does drive it. Is there any budget number that you don't work with?
There really hasn't been. You know, we used to always have a limit of going anything below $5,000 was just kind of too small for our crews to be set up for. But we really are trying to break that barrier, too, to give more service. This year we've added repair service, so we have a carpenter can go out and just take care of small issues. And so really now there's no number. We don't mind small jobs. We don't mind... You know, we've done stuff that's a couple thousand. We've done, I think our biggest job was $250,000. And, you know, everything in between. And we try to treat every client the same. And sometimes it's better to have the small jobs.
Sure.
You know, because they're quicker and easier.
Absolutely. All right, hey, we got to take a quick break, Dave. And we're going to talk more about Architect and low maintenance decking versus wood options. And you know, how to really budget for these types of projects. And we'll also take your phone calls, folks, 312-981-7200. If you have some questions about the Architect properties as well as what they do and the offerings, we'll open up the phone lines so you can ask directly.
Thanks again, Frank.
Getting into the process and what is exactly you know you guys offer and what's the benefits of going with your company. And one thing you want to hyper-focus on really that your company is great at is customer service and the design process. Let's talk about that.
Sure, absolutely. I was sharing kind of our design process before we went to the break in the news. We're really focusing on understanding the details the client's looking to build. And then once we get back together and finalize the design, all of our focus turns to making sure exactly what we discuss is what gets built. And, you know, earlier you identified that I didn't have a background in construction. I didn't realize how difficult that actually is until I got into the business.
Yeah. I mean, it certainly is. It's a beast of a business, you know, if you don't control it right. But you guys have methods. You have systems in place. You mentioned something about a 300-point checklist. Tell me about that. How did you develop a 300-point checklist?
So when I first bought the franchise, it was a month-long training. So I went to Richmond, Virginia for a month, and they had great stuff on sales. They had great stuff on design and all these other things, marketing, everything else. We got to production management, and it was like a little flow chart with 15 items. I'm like, this is nowhere near enough. So I came back, and we started building on that, and every year we reinvent it and add. It's all the little things that go wrong, you understand, mm-hmm. in construction, and we want to prevent those.
Wait, hold on. Things go wrong in construction?
Never. Yeah, never. When you're destroying and creating, things go nuts, right?
Yeah, it's perfect every single time.
Right. So we started building that list and just trying to add to, here, let's avoid this, let's avoid that. And drives my staff a little crazy because I'm a bit...
I would imagine 300 points is a lot of points.
It is. And for most jobs, you know, probably 30 to 40% are not applicable.
Right.
But it's those little things that happen once in a while that are what screw you up.
Right.
And that's the point I make to them of looking at it.
The devils are in the details. That's right. Now let's walk you through. Let's just say Leanne's your client, all right? Leanne, you be a picky client. Okay. And what would you like to get done here? Outdoor kitchen, huh? How about that?
Yes, we'll do that.
Yeah. So excuse her voice. I don't know if you heard her earlier. She's been partying till like 4 a.m. It's her birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
But she's, you know, hey, she's allowed to. She's 25. I mean, and her dad's sitting right there. So
this is great.
He approved it. All right. So she's your client. Walk us through for the people listening at home how it all works. And folks, if you have questions for Dave, 312-981-7200. If you're in the market for a porch, a patio, a outdoor kitchen, screened in, whether or not screened in, four season room, Dave will answer all your questions. And really the important things are, what are the materials I should use? So you're going to design this outdoor kitchen. What's your question?
What would you recommend where we start?
Where do you start? That's a good question. Where do you start?
So I'd start with asking what you want to do in this outdoor kitchen. Are you talking about, you know, obviously most people are thinking of grilling, but what else do you see having feature, you know, function and options for? You want a fridge? Do you want sink? What will you do out there?
I would definitely say a fridge. I'd like to have
lots
guests.
Of beer in there.
25.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people.
Okay. Is this part of a patio that already exists? Are you looking to build some hardscape around it? What kind of space as far as number of people and type of activities do you want to have?
So I would like to have maybe like a bonfire if we could leave room for that.
Okay.
Or fire pit, maybe?
Fire pit.
Yeah.
All right. Fire pit or more of a fireplace?
Ooh. Now we're evolving.
Yeah. How pricey is that?
See what he's doing? Well, he's upselling you right now is what's happening here. I'm kidding. He's a good salesman. He just racked you up about 5 G's right there.
Yes. At least 5 G's, yeah. Yeah. No, big difference there. You know, for a pit, you're probably spending $1,000 for a fireplace. It could be 5, it could be 10, it could be 15. You can go crazy with a fireplace. So it's a whole different scale.
Are you seeing a lot of that, the fire pits and the fireplaces, outdoor fireplaces?
It's a nice balance. A lot of people want fire pits. Huge popularity. Fireplaces, it really is a budget question. People love it, but, you know.
And that's your next question, Leanne. What's your budget?
I don't even know what my budget is at this moment.
What does 30 grand get you?
$30,000 will get you quite a bit,
okay.
You know, for an outdoor kitchen space. Now, the one thing I talk to people about in the Chicago area, you know, a lot of people think of outdoor kitchens. They see the ones that are in California and Florida and Arizona with the fridges and the sinks and all these things. Mm-hmm. The reality is we've got 6 months. And the reality
if we're
is,
lucky.
Yeah, right? And that fridge doesn't do well in the winter.
Yeah.
So there's some things you want to think about. We actually have kind of coined the phrase Chicago outdoor kitchens because they're not quite the same look as what you want to do out there. You get rid of some of the appliances, you focus on the grill, some cool counter space, a nice bar area, mm-hmm. maybe a cooler instead of a fridge because that's going to last the weather and be more endurable, but give you a place to keep the drinks, you know.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, 30 grand certainly can get you a lot of that, and especially now you get into, now how many people are you going to have at these parties?
Yeah.
You know, is it 10 of your closest friends or is it 30?
Yeah. So would the 30 grand include like a seating area or is it just the kitchen alone?
It absolutely could. You know, $30,000, you could get a nice outdoor kitchen, maybe a bar with that, a small, you know.
Seating area, the fire pit as well?
Yeah,
absolutely. Nice. You know, you get into some code issues with fire pits, those things we have to check too. But yeah, you can usually get a nice patio for those kind of dollars. You're not going to get the giant monster patio.
But now, Leanne, before you close the deal here, hold on. Don't sign yet. we have a caller with a question. Hey, Ben, thanks for calling the show. You're on with Dave, Frank, and Leanne. What's your question?
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Hey, pretty good. I just had a question. Do you guys come down to Kankakee?
We don't. I'd love to, but we're not quite set up with the crews to go that far. But I wish we could.
So do I. Sounds good, though.
Thanks, Ben. Thanks for the call. We appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
So what counties do you go to? That's a good question that Ben brings up.
Really, all of the suburban Chicagoland areas we work with. So Will, Lake, Cook, DuPage, what am I missing? Kane, you know, the collar counties, I guess you'd say, right?
Now, do you guys need to, is there a lot of permit pulling in what you guys do?
Yeah, almost every job.
Yeah. So you have that good relationship with the cities and municipalities and all that.
We try hard to have a good relationship, yes.
It's never easy. I mean, you jump through a lot of hoops in doing what we do, yes. You know. And but, you know, when you do it often enough, you get good at it. At least you know some of the pitfalls, especially when it gets into, like, gradient and soil and moisture levels. You guys have a whole other world dealing with the exterior there. Do you ever run into those kind of problems?
Some issues, not as much with the soil content and things like that these days, but once in a while we run into, like, where there's a watershed or things like that we have to deal with. And yeah.
Fun, always fun.
Yeah.
Let's take some more calls. Folks, we're taking your calls. If you have any questions about putting in that new deck, that outdoor kitchen, those pavers you've been thinking about buying, Dave is here from Architect to answer your questions. Let's take our call. We got Mike on the line. Hey, Mike. Thanks for calling the show.
Hey, Dave. Hey, Frank.
How's it going?
Hey, Mike. How are you doing?
Good. I'm good. We've lived in St. Charles for the last 20 years. We bought the house used. It had this huge deck on it. It's a 2x6-seater. I'm guessing the square footage is like maybe 1,500 to 1,700 feet.
Okay.
And
big deck.
Yes, it is. And I've been replacing areas of it through the years, sanding it, restaining it, and really it needs to be completely replaced. And I'm wondering what kind of a cost. Number one, again, it's 2x6-seater. I don't know if there's something better to use now, if you guys even do stuff like that or not.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's several different ways to approach that. Do you think the framing's in good shape? If it is, you might be able to look at what we call a redeck.
Okay.
And that means replace the decking, the trim, the rails. You could save the cost of framing. That could be a great way to control costs.
And Dave, Mike, are you familiar with, you know, what to look for when he's talking about a solid substructure?
Yeah, all the footings, that stuff. There's, you know, there might be areas we would probably have to shim to get a level. But again, it's, you know, whoever put this in, I can't imagine what it cost them. I mean, this thing is huge.
Any kind of rot going on there?
Underneath, no. It's basically just, you know, the cedar itself, the ends of the boards. And again, I had replaced, I've done this now for like probably the last 12 years. And
it sounds like you're ready for a new deck at this point, Mike. Why don't you hold on? We'll get you Dave's information for Architect. And why don't you give out your website and the phone number that somebody can reach at right now?
Yeah, the website is architectofchicagoland.com, architectofchicagoland.com. If you want to go on there, you can click on it, Mike, and send us a quick email. We'll give you a call this week. Happy to talk to you about it. And there's a lot of options you can look at. So don't feel constrained by that size that's there or what you've been dealing with so far.
How do you spell architect?
Oh, thank you for asking that, because so many people get it wrong. Architect, ARCHADECK.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for the call, Mike. We appreciate it. Good luck. Give them a call. These guys know what they're doing. It's the show that keeps on giving. And we're dishing out some good advice right now. Joining us from Architect, that's ARCHADECK. I'll misspell it. Don't erase that. ARCHADECK, Architect of Chicagoland. David Berryhill is the president. He's sitting next to us. He's answering your calls about your outdoor spaces. If you're in the market for a new deck, a new patio, a new outdoor kitchen, you name it, this guy does it all. Let's talk to Anthony, who's been holding patiently. Hey, Anthony.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
All right, not bad.
Good. What's your question, buddy?
So my question is, I need a new porch, front porch. So it's about 14. The length is 14, and the width would probably be 7 or 8 feet,
okay.
Also including the roof.
So it's going to be a covered porch?
Yes, covered porch.
Okay, cool. Are you decided
wooden.
On it's wood right now?
No, I want wood.
You do want wood. Okay.
Yes.
Now, Dave, would you recommend wood, or do you, would you? What kind of advice would you give Anthony?
Concrete?
Repeat the question.
Anthony, what's there now?
There is a concrete, really small concrete, just stepway up.
Okay.
And I want to, you know, give the front a, you know, curb appeal, so I figured put in the front porch.
So answering your question, Frank, it really would depend on looking at the house, what would make the most sense, whether more of a deck porch would make sense or more of a concrete floor. And that's something to look at. And also your taste, obviously, are really key, Anthony, what you think will look good on the house.
And what do you have that figured out?
In this neighborhood, I mean, we've been looking around and we looked at concrete and said, no, I think the wood is what we want.
And let me ask you a question. Why wood over a resin product?
It doesn't have to be. Oh. I want it to look like wood.
You mean like a deck?
So you want it to look, okay, gotcha. So that's the difference there. And Dave, you can chime in here because there's a difference between the maintenance and the care of wood versus a, you know, synthetic product that looks just like wood, but has like a 30-year warranty or something.
Right. That's a big decision everybody these days is making if they're doing some type of deck floor outside, and that's whether they want to do a wood floor, traditional, either pine or cedar versus synthetics, the low maintenance decking that are made by so many manufacturers.
And what's the percentage more you'll pay for that? If you pay $5,000 for a porch for, you know, this size, but you know, if you went to resin, then it would be what, you know, 50% more to end up $7,500, that type of thing, or
it's usually a 70% to 100% upgrade to go to the low maintenance material. Now that if it's just a deck that's open to the environment, it's going to take the normal wear and tear. What I tell people is you're looking at about a 15 to 20 year payback compared to a pine deck, maybe a 5 to 10 year payback compared to a cedar deck of your investment. So if someone's in their house and says, I'm moving in 3 years, low maintenance might not make sense from a purely financial standpoint. But if you're going to be here for 20 years, raise your kids and, you know, retire there, could be a great investment for you.
What's your situation, Anthony? You going to be there for a while?
No, actually. We are empty nesters now, and I'm just trying to fix up the house so that in the next, you know, 4 to 5 years, then we can start looking at selling it. But so based on, start doing the improvements now.
Good call. And based on that, Dave, what would you recommend?
My first thought would be to stick with just, you know, a simple wood deck. You'll get it stained once or twice, but you'll be way ahead of the game as your total investment, and it'll still look great. And really give it, you know, wood is a great product to work with as long as you maintain it. So,
all right.
And what would a price run for something like that? I mean, like I said, 14. I know it's a ballpark. You never know what kind of, you know, what you're going to add and post and all the other stuff. Just what can I expect to spend?
Absolutely. And, you know, probably the biggest question mark in the case of a front porch is the roof connection and how that's all going to frame up. But we find that in a front porch, the kind of the scale you're talking, probably high teens, you know, 18, 19, 20,000 would not be too out crazy, but it would really depend on all those details.
Little variables here and there, yeah. Well, you know what, Anthony, if you're interested, you can get Dave's information. You can shoot him an email, and they can come out and give you a quote, right? That's what you guys do.
Yeah, I'm online looking at it now. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
You got it, Anthony. Thanks for the call.
All
right, let's grab one more call, Dave, if you don't mind. They keep rolling in. Let's keep answering the questions. We love our audience. Hey, Pat, thanks for calling the Frank Fontana Show. What's your question?
It's flower boxes made out of Crab Orchard. I have one that's 10 feet long and a second one that's 4 feet long, and they're starting to deteriorate, pulverize in the bricks, and they have to be replaced. I don't know what to do.
Dave, do you have the answer to that? Because I don't.
So I'll be honest, that's not our normal type of project, but we do build planters occasionally. There are, you know, wooden options, but of course, hardscape options you can deal with. Might want to reach out to more of a landscaper or even look online for what products are out there.
Pat, are you looking to rebuild the similar ones or repair what you have going on now?
I don't think you can repair them because if you repair them, like one time I heard thumping and I looked out the window and there were two little boys with sticks hitting the bricks because of the powder that was coming out of them.
Did you go out there and go, you little pesky, get out of here? Did you hit them, throw an orange at them or something?
No, I didn't holler at them. No, I just knew it was, well, it's getting, the house is in good condition. Excellent. But it's the planters that are giving me a lot of problems now.
Gotcha. Well, good news for you is that's not an expensive option for you to fix. If you're just going to hone in on that, I think, you can get away with getting a carpenter out there to redo it with some, treated cedar or something and, get it to match up with the color of your home. So that's what I recommend is if you have a handyman or a local carpenter that you trust.
No, not right now. I'm a widow now, and then it's like, what do I do next?
Well, I'll tell you what you're going to do next. We're going to help you out. My producer, Dave, is going to get you information, and I know a bunch of good guys that could do that for you.
That'd be wonderful, and I really, really would appreciate it.
You got it, Pat. Thank you for calling the show. Just hold on, and Dave, my producer, will get your info.
Thank you so much.
You got it. All right, we got to take a quick break. Dave, thank you so much. Dave Berryhill, president of Architect of Chicagoland. We really appreciate you coming on the show. Welcome to WGN Radio. And, we look forward to having you back on. We got a lot of people asking a lot of great questions.
Thanks, Frank. It was a lot of fun.
The website, one more time before you go?
Architectofchicagoland.com.
It's not just home improvement. It's life improvement.
No, you're not alone.
The Frank Fontana Show.
Because I'm going to make this place your home.
On Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the show, folks. I'm Frank Fontana. We'll be here until 3 o'clock. The boys from the Beat will be on after that. Our studio just got a little bit more fuller. Didn't know it was possible. We're still being joined with Leanne Morgery, Army Sergeant, Flight Medic Unit. She's seen time in Afghanistan. She's just came from Honduras, and now you're going to Texas, right?
Yep.
And what's going to happen there?
I'll be just stationed in another medevac. My voice is so good.
Yeah. Again, if you haven't been listening to the whole show, she just turned 25, and she was out partying late night. Yeah. So
I just gave her more water, by the way.
Oh, good.
So she'll be better.
A little shot of tequila in that water, too.
No.
I hear that helps with the hangover. I don't know. Anyway.
I've heard that a beer helps very, very. It does wonders when you party all night.
Now. Exactly. And joining us, my family just happened to walk in. My mom and dad are in town. My mom's in the studio. Say hi. And everybody. Yeah. My son Luca's on the mic. Say hi, Luke.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah, he's a regular on the show. My wife Sherry's here. My daughter Lola. Everybody's here. My dad's in the green room. We got Tom Benigno's waiting in the green room, coming in next. Right now, we're turning our focus to art, though. Andy Kozlowski is the artist. You could see him at Gallery 200. Andy, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Yeah, man, I'm always fascinated by artists. We always have, every couple months, we bring in a feature artist to talk about their skills and their background and how they get started. What is your method of art, let's call it?
Well, I look at it's more abstract art. And my metal art, actually, I'm a mechanical engineer by trade, by career. We own a small family business who does machining. And a friend of mine had an opportunity with a bar in Naperville. He was doing a lot of metal art or metal in the bar. And he was just going to do like a plain stainless steel bar. So my friend reached out to me and asked me, since I'm creative and work with metal, if I can come up with something. Well, we were machining some aerospace parts in aluminum at the time, and the way that the light hit it had this beautiful iridescent look to it. So I started playing around with some tools, and one thing led to another. I patented a process where it's called Melusions, and all my art, my metal art.
Melusion, like metal and illusions?
Exactly,
like
right.
It. Very creative.
Milling, actually. It's milling.
Milling,
because it's a milling process. So the trade name is Melusions. And what it is, it's, we machine different patterns, images directly into the metal. And they reflect light like a hologram. So a lot of the patterns that you see are very three-dimensional.
And that's what you brought in studio with you today, right?
Correct, yes.
And folks, if you want to see this, go to WGNradio.com/watch, and you can hop online right now and see the radio show live and see some of this art. Can you hand me one of the pieces? I'd just like to feel it and touch it. Thank you, Vanna White. That's Dave, by the way. That's awesome. So when you say imprint into it, is it like a 3D laser kind of thing? Explain the process.
It's actually machined. So there's hard tools like end mills and routers that I design with different cutting edges to actually machine the pattern right into the surface of the metal.
And so, when you say different textures, this one has a linear, pattern to it. This one seems, it's a little, I like the speckled kind of glittery look to it. How do you achieve that?
Well, then we use a process called powder coating, on top of the base metal. The powder coating is transparent colors, so the silvers that you see are just clear coats. Now, some of the clear coats have a little bit of that silver speckle in there. The other color, like that gold that you have in your hand, that's a tinted powder coat.
Interesting. And it's on a fiberglass back? Is that what that is?
Yeah.
It's fantastic. So do you outside of like functional clocks, and I don't want to break this here. Why don't you take that from me so I don't break it. Do you take commissioned work as well?
Sure, absolutely.
What's the craziest thing you've had to do out of metal?
Well, I've made – I'm a big fan of kaleidoscopes, and one of my creations was a big five-foot diameter moment in time in a kaleidoscope, and it's made out of 400 individual cut pieces, individually painted, and they're assembled onto an acrylic back. And now that piece, currently it's just an art piece, but I have a hole in the center that I want to eventually make it into a clock. So
how long does it take you to put a piece like that together?
That one took about two days to put together.
And do you sketch your stuff out first? I mean, like, what's your process in terms of, is something that elaborate?
Well, yeah, like for that particular piece, you know, I had that embedded in my mind, a picture of a kaleidoscope at a moment. And through different CAD, CAM softwares and graphic softwares, I designed that kaleidoscope image, if you will, like a mandala.
Right.
You know? And when I have that on paper, then I get a bunch of markers, colored pencils, start coloring things in, or actually on the computer, I'll color in different areas with the colors that I envision. And that's a painstaking process because you look at it one way, that doesn't look too good, change it, go back and forth until you finally get your final design that you go with.
Now, as a kid, were you an artistic kid? Because I remember growing up, and my mom could testify, I used to just sketch and draw and like doodle. My son has that same thing. Right, Luca? You like to sketch and doodle?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're pretty good at that, right?
What does that mean?
Well, that means like when you're sitting with your pens and your, you know, chalk and stuff, and you're drawing, right? Like, you're like, Dad, draw this with us.
Yep.
Yeah, pretty good. So our friend here is an artist, Luca. Andy's an artist. You want to be an artist when you grow up? Yeah. It's radio. You got to say something, not shake your head.
Okay.
He's learning. So, I mean, were you, as a kid, did you always know that you were going to go into art?
I never knew I was going to go into art. You know, we had a family business, and I pretty much knew that I was going to, you know, I had a passion for machining. And, you know, I worked with my dad's shop since I was a little kid. But, yes, I always had that artistic side of me, and I, you know, always did sketch and doodle. And, you know, back in the day when you made your mixed tapes for your girlfriend, you know.
Hey, now.
And,
yeah, I remember
and, you know,
that.
You copy your albums onto a tape so you can play it in the car. I made up my own tape covers with airbrushes and markers.
Did it ever work for
stuff.
You, by the way, those mixed tapes for the girls? No. It almost like, it was like, that was like the end of it.
Yeah.
You know, like the end of the relationship. We were just shooting for that one last thing, and that mixtape was going to bring it all back together.
Didn't happen.
Sweetheart, did it ever work for you?
No, they tried, but no, it didn't.
Yeah. They tried. I never tried. I never had to use a mixtape. Funny stuff. What's that, son?
Can I say something?
You would like to say something? Sure, Luca. You could say something. Go ahead. Do you have a question for Andy?
Hi, Daddy.
Oh, hi, son. You're so kind.
Cute.
It's funny, does this bring your family to work day today at WGN Radio? At least I'm making it up. you guys display at Gallery 200. Tell me about Gallery 200.
Well, Gallery 200 is a conglomerate of local artists in the West Chicago area. The gallery is located at 103 West Washington Street in West Chicago.
And how many pieces do you have currently up there?
Currently in there, well, I have a variety of things that I do, not only metal art. I also have started doing some jewelry. I do some wire wrapping of different stones. I do some chainmail jewelry, some beaded jewelry. So I have a variety of stuff in there right now. I have some colored pencils. I actually have a small little coloring book, too, of like the mandalas that start out as a concept for some of these metal art pieces. So I have a little coloring book out there as well.
Interesting. Good stuff. We're talking to Andy Kozlowski, who's an artist right now showing at Gallery 200. Do you have a website?
Yes, I do. It's www.millusions.com.
And you teach there as well, right?
Yeah, I do classes for, like I did a class on making the mandalas, the color pencil mandalas, and then also some jewelry classes as well.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll have more with that. And we're going to talk a little bit, since I have an artist in the studio, and I got my wide panel of guests here today, including my son, my daughter Lola, my wife. We have Leanne Marjorie, Army Sergeant, is joining us. We're going to talk about, and if you don't mind, Andy, the... I just hit news today. Ellen DeGeneres is selling her home, and it's very artistic and very unique. All right, we're talking with artist Andy Kalzowski. We're going to get into Ellen DeGeneres' home in a second here, but you were mentioning something that really unique about your art. What is the magic that we were discussing?
One of the magic items of Millusions is the process, the machining process. You see brushed aluminum out in the marketplace in a variety of places, and it's pretty static.
Yeah.
Now, my process has a very three-dimensional look, and the patterns that we machine in there with regular, you know, halogen lighting or LED lighting bring a very 3D holographic look to them. But the real magic comes in when you introduce semi-intelligent lighting to it. I mean, like LED lighting or lighting that turns on and off. If you have a different bank of colored LEDs on a piece that's turning on and off in sequence, it could actually bring animation to the piece.
Yeah.
So you have animation without motors or mechanical things that can wear
Fascinating.
Out.
Fascinating. I love it. Now, let me ask you, Andy, do you think this would look good in Ellen DeGeneres' home that she's selling? I think pieces of your artwork can actually help sell this home that really needs a lot of work. You know, it's on the market for just a mere $45 million. Yeah, the collective sigh that just came over the room here. $45 million. And this is a piece of real estate located in Santa Barbara. And her wife and her, Portia de Rossi, own. And apparently they're in the flipping business. Leanne, did you know that?
I did not.
Yeah, well, welcome to the world here.
How do you flip a $45 million house?
I don't know. But if you see, I'm looking at pictures now. It is not just a home. It's a villa. Inspired by created by the architect in 1930, Wallace Frost, who spent a lot of time living in Italy, and they have appropriately dubbed the home the villa. And if you see the photos, you can hop online and just Google Ellen DeGeneres' home for sale. It's got barrel roofed tops, ceilings, terracotta surfaces, 18th century tile, vintage light fixtures, rustic exposed beams. It's just, you know, shy of 11,000 square feet. I think that's enough space
for
two people.
Abode.
A little humble abode. It's got, which this is what freaks me out about this. 11,000 square feet, just under 11,000 square feet, only six bedrooms. Where's the rest of the space? You know? But it's got eight bathrooms, nine fireplaces, and multiple libraries. So it's broken up, it sounds like. I mean,
no ballroom?
No ballroom. Not that it says here so far. It does live on a little piece of land, only 16 acres. I mean, of course, right? Sprawling hills. You need that. And the great thing about this architecture is it was designed around the landscape. So it wasn't just a plot of land, and they put a foundation, and they said, let's look at this space. Let's look at the land. Let's see how this home will fit into that. And I think that's a very artistic way to look at it, wouldn't you say, Andy?
Absolutely, yeah.
Now, I'm trying to think where your artwork would fit into this here. Do you do any kind of Italian-inspired metalwork?
I haven't, but...
How about that? This is what we're going to change a little bit. How about a rustic twist on what you do? Because everything you see that you're doing is really shiny and like very contemporary. It definitely has a place in the art world. Would you consider doing rusted pieces? And like, because I personally gravitate towards the time-worn to rustic, you know, things that feel like they've been aged for years. Have you worked in that medium before?
Sort of, yes. And with as you say, you know, my stuff is very contemporary looking, very shiny.
Yeah.
I have done some pieces, excuse me, where I actually remove some of that shininess and actually dull it up a little bit and make it look like it's this beautiful shiny piece has been sitting out for years out and being weathered and being beat up a little bit. So, yeah.
Yeah, people pay a lot of money for stuff that looks old.
I do a lot of outdoor decor as well, like garden stakes and garden candle holders and things like that.
Yeah, I could definitely see your medium doing well in that. Mm-hmm. And it also might do well in Mr. T's former Lake Forest mansion.
Probably more in his house.
I think so, too. If you look at the pictures here, you can Google Mr. T's former Lake Forest mansion. It's a nice piece of property. It's more contemporary and aligned with your work. Let's see. It is on the market for $7.5 million, a little bit more affordable, you know, compared to the $45 million that Ellen, I mean. It's not Santa Barbara. It's he owned the mansion located off of Green Bay Road back in the late 80s, which would be around the time of the Rocky Balboa franchise, right? So he had all his loot coming in.
At the same time as the A-Team?
I was just going to say, could have been around I think he piggybacked Rocky with the A-Team, which would make sense because this is not a cheap home. this will be 30 years old, I think, let's see, this year. It says here that he famously used a chainsaw to cut down 100 trees on the property due to his allergies. I pity the fool. Pity that tree who gave me that allergy. Took him down. He went out there. Can you imagine Mr. T going out there like crazy buck wild just with a chainsaw and cutting down 100 trees himself? I could totally see him doing that.
I could see him doing that.
Right? So the current owner planted 150 trees after that, and he showed him.
Yeah, he did.
Put those trees right back in. The home has 9 bedrooms, 10 bathrooms, attached 2-car garage, a detached 4-car garage with 1-bedroom apartment, and an in-ground pool and a pool house.
I wonder if he uses gold chains to use a saw.
I heard that it was a gold-tipped chainsaw.
Yeah. Washed in gold, at least.
Right, and it hung from his neck that he would just swing it up and bang. Yeah, it's good stuff. Andy, once again, where can people find your artwork?
In Gallery 200 in West Chicago. Address is 103 West Washington in West Chicago. The Gallery 200, actually, we originally were in a gallery called, the address was 200 Main Street. They're renovating that building, so we temporarily have been moved to 103 West Washington.
And if I'm listening and I want to take a class, or I want my son or daughter to sign up for one of your classes, how does that happen?
You come into the gallery. We're revamping our website right now, but you come into the gallery, take a look at all the different things there. There are many other artists that offer classes, from color pencil sketching to oil paintings to pottery. Very, very many different different classes you can take.
And before we let you go, we get some text coming in. Hi, a fellow metal artist here, although a little bit more primitive than what you're talking about. I'm looking for a HD plasma CAD table. Do you have any recommendations?
There is just skipped out of my mind. Piranha makes one, and also Plasma CAD. I think they're out of Colorado.
Colorado. Okay, mm-hmm. Cool. Well, there's your answer for that. And we have one other question coming in. Can you ask your guest what price the wrapped stone jewelry starts at, please?
Very low priced. I mean, some of the stones that I picked are most of them are hand-picked from Lake Superior on the shores of Madeline Island. And Lake Superior is known to have some of the oldest stones on the planet, because it's one of the oldest glacier cut-up lakes. So they're low cost, anywhere from like $10, ranging up all the way into like some amber that I have in the hundreds of dollars. So.
And we have the videos up on our Facebook page at WGN Radio. You can go check them out. Andy, thank you so much. You can visit me online at frankfontana.net. That's my website. You can visit me on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter at Frank Fontana. Get to see all the craziness going on in our world. Speaking of craziness going on in our world, Dave, you recently did a story on your Telemundo newscast.
Yes, I was covering a story, and it had to do with licenses for undocumented people, considering the strict immigration laws into effect. People are actually afraid that the administration would have access to people's information, addresses. I did that story because people had more questions than answers.
Yeah, and when Dave told me this, I was like, you know what, there's one guy that we know that can actually answer this question better than anybody, and that's our buddy Tom Benigno, who's the Deputy Secretary of State of our good state here in Illinois. And Tom's bringing in his village trustee, who's actually running for the Norwich First team. Tom is running for mayor of Norwich. Tom, thank you for joining us. Peter Fontanetta, thank you for joining us. Oh, my pleasure. Guys, welcome on a good Sunday.
Thank you, Frank. Thank you for having us this afternoon.
Yeah,
my
pleasure.
That's a good question that he brought up about the TVDLs.
Let's talk about it, because it seems to be a hot topic button. You know, Trump's all about it. So explain to us here how that impacts us here in Illinois.
Well, about 3 years ago, the Secretary of State's office, Secretary of State Jesse White and ourselves took on this, probably our biggest initiative in the office in the last 18 years, to give a driver's license to undocumented Illinois residents. And so far to this day, over 266,000 people have coming in and gotten their license mailed back to them. That information is kept private. It's all protected by the Driver's License Privacy Act. We're not allowed to share that information with any other government agency, and we have not to this day. It's been a very big success, because these are people that are residents of Illinois that have been here for 20, 30 years, good family people, been driving, and now what we like to say makes the streets safer, because now you know that when they're behind that wheel, they took a vision test, they took a written test, They took a road test, and yeah, they have insurance.
And what's the, I would imagine, you know, with just the current state of terrorism, you've got things are going on in London and all over the world. I mean, what's the fear factor associated with it? You know,
It's very limited, the fear factor, because as I said, all their papers are brought in, and we look at them all, and it does go through a process. It goes through our warehouse in Springfield. In fact, it's a warehouse that's unmarked. And all the and everything gets checked out there. All the documents get checked out at that warehouse. So it's very limited. And like I said, these are good family people that have been here for years, raising their kids here, and probably are better drivers than we are because they couldn't get stopped.
Got it.
You know.
And if people have more questions about this, they can visit the state's website as well.
Absolutely. Turn to our website, IllinoisCyberDrive.com.
Excellent. Now let's turn your focus here to your current election. You're running for mayor of Norridge, and Peter, you're running for village trustee.
Yes.
Well, how's it going, guys? Last time we had you on a couple weeks ago, and since then, what's the buzz been like?
Well, it's been very good. It's been picking up momentum, and we've got a lot of good vibes from people. The election is right around the corner. April 4th is election. And in fact, this coming week is early voting, Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5, you can early vote. Last week was early voting also. A little bit over 500 people have voted already in the village.
Yeah, and you know, I've been following the election, and got some family lives in the area, so I got vested interest into it. The airport noise is something that we hear often, you know, as a big complaint. Is it that bad?
The jet noise is very bad in Norridge, and even in the suburban areas around Norridge. And this is something that has to be addressed again. We addressed it early on, but since the last few years, there's been new runways, new flight patterns, and it only got worse.
So who do you fight for that? I mean, are you fighting the city? Or are you fighting?
No, you go to your congressman.
The congressman.
You go to your congressman, and you sit down with the Federal Aviation Administration, and you just let them know that, you know, we have to limit certain flight patterns. I know there's a new flight pattern right by my house. I live off of Lawrence Avenue.
Yeah.
It starts at 10 at night, and it goes all the way till 7 in the morning.
Oh, geez.
And the noise, you know, and it hurts property value. It can hurt a lot of different things.
I'm sure. Now, I mean, to get something changed like that, I mean, I would imagine, does that affect the airlines themselves? Or, I mean, are they pushing for more flights? Like, how high up the rung does it go?
That's why you have to go to the federal agency and you have to sit down with the congressman. And not that we want to limit the flights. We want to limit the flight patterns that they use.
Yeah.
Okay, those could be alternated. And there's quite a few now. In the last 10 years, they've really brought some new flight patterns in and some new runways in that they can switch off. And that's all we're saying, switch off.
So that's going to be one of your big things you guys are fighting for.
That was a topic that came up quite a bit, Frank,
yeah,
during the election. But I think we answered pretty much with a lot of the questions the residents had about that. We had a lot of fundraisers and a lot of meet and greets about that. And
Hot topic?
Yeah, that was probably one of the biggest topics, that and the school district.
See, what's going on with the school districts?
Well, the school districts, Tom, you want to take that? I mean,
yeah, one of our school districts, this
district
school
80.
School district 80. Is out of money. Okay,
like straight up out of money?
Straight up out of money, and there's in dire need of repairs.
How does that happen? I mean,
it's a good question.
These are our children. I mean, I got my son sitting in my lap. I can't even imagine that I had to tell him that, hey, your school is run out of money.
And how important are schools to a community? I mean, that's what keeps your property value up. That's what the first question someone asks when they move into a community is, how's the schools?
There wasn't a long range
plan. So that's
going
to be one of our biggest challenges once we get into it, to make sure that we get the school back on track. We have to put a long range plan together. We're going to have to get some immediate funds together to keep them.
And who
money.
Do you go to for those funds?
I mean, you have to get federal grant money that's earmarked for education, state grant money that's earmarked for education. There's money out there. You can even go to the private sector.
It just takes somebody like yourself to rally up and your team to really fight for it.
Well, to care enough.
Well, and to care enough. And I can imagine this happens, you know, village after village, city after city, or you know, have these micro, you know, battles within it. And you need a good positive leadership to keep going.
Well, like Tom said, there is money out there and it's earmarked for certain things, like for schools. And
yeah,
you got to care enough to go about and get it.
Guys, we wish you the best with this. You know, when is the election again?
April 4th.
April 4th.
But you could actually vote all the way through April 3rd for early voting.
And if I may say real fast, our numbers are punch 2, 4, 8, 9, 10.
And guys, you're hitting, I mean, we got texts flying in from all over. They want action. People want action. They want to know who to complain about you know, broadcast interference, which is something you didn't even talk about when it comes to the O'Hare, you know, traffic. They're also talking about, you know, even some upright, angry texts here about a class action lawsuit against the city of Chicago or O'Hare Field. Who do we talk to? The airlines are driving us crazy. So, guys, you got a battle on your hand. You got a mission on your hand. Good luck to you guys.
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you, Frank. And it is a battle, but I know we can all sit down and get together, put a couple of nice groups together, some blue ribbon committees together, and attack this problem.
Well, if there's anybody can do it, Tom, it's you guys.
Yes. Thank you.
Good luck to you. And
Frank,
I wish you
thanks
the best.
For having us again. Again, you made it very comfortable for us. Thank
My
you very
pleasure,
much.
My pleasure, man. I,
thank
I just, you. You know, I want you guys to do well, and I think you stand for some great stuff.
Appreciate it.
That's right. It's time for a few of my favorite things. The time of the show where I talk about really cool, neat products that I come across and love. And I was in Mariano's the other day, and you know, I'd like to drink nice cold water. And I was reaching for a plastic bottle, and I saw this carton sitting next to the plastic bottles, and it said boxed water is better. So I said, hey, let me try it. And boom, hello, it is. And joining me right now to talk about it is the creator, Ben Gott, who is the guy behind Box Water. Ben, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having us on.
So how did you come up with this idea?
So around 2009, I've had a few different little startups, specifically in the web space, as everyone kind of did around that time. And one of them was on its descendancy and wasn't working out. And we were talking about how bottled water had kind of become, I sometimes joke, the logo of all things wrong. And, you know, this is the target of everything wrong with what we're doing to the environment, with being wasteful and things like that.
And dangerous for that matter. I mean, there's the stories came out about it sitting in your car for too long. It releases the BPAs and all that kind of stuff.
But there was a fascinating behavior. Its sales since then, and actually before then, around 2009, have continued to go up and up and up as soda kind of comes down and as really sugary drinks kind of come down. And it's a pretty rare thing when someone's like, this stuff's the worst thing in the world, but I'll have another one, you know, because the consumption continued to go up. So that's where we said, I wonder if we could do it different. And that's the kind of the genesis of the company.
Well, and it's right. So in its basic concept, it's water in a carton, like you would find a milk carton. And it's unusual, like you know, the thought of like, oh.
And the design is a bit different.
Yeah. The design is cool. The branding is unique. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about the branding. I mean, how long did you labor over? Now, is the full name of the product Boxed Water is better?
Yeah. Our trademark is Boxed Water. But the full name is Boxed Water is better. How long did we labor? I mean, it's pretty funny. Honestly, the initial design that you see on the carton today has been iterated a zillion times, probably only deviated about 10% from what you see today.
Font size,
yeah,
right.
We finished that up in about a week, and then I, of course, labored over the details forever because that's kind of my thing and my role in the company is the creative and design side.
That's awesome. Leanne, what do you think about this?
I love the design. It's super
Thank you.
Simple.
Thank you.
To translate, she said she loves the design. It's super simple. Again, she's turned 25 last night. If you heard the story.
I didn't.
Was out drinking a lot and lost her voice.
So it's gone.
I'm translating now.
I stayed in last night.
Other than the carton itself, I mean, you have some information on the back that the box is sustainable.
Sure.
74% of its paper made from trees, a renewable resource. The trees mm-hmm. come from well-managed forests. Did you have to forage for the product? I mean, is there companies out there that help you get to the goal of?
Yeah, I mean, we've grown significantly in the past 7 years. We're super lucky that, you know, we're still around. The beverage game is pretty hard. But when we started, we didn't know anything we were doing. So we went to some of these carton manufacturers who already had these supply chains set up and said, you know, we want to do this. And honestly, a lot of them thought we were pretty crazy. They don't so much anymore, which is nice. But
are you the only one in Illinois doing this?
We're based in Michigan. Started in Grand Rapids, Michigan. We're now in every single state, though.
How many stores are you in?
Well, you know, we don't know the exact count because our distributors don't give us that information, which is a little frustrating. But we are probably around 12,000 stores.
Wow.
Yeah. I can't believe
it. I mean, are your sales, notable?
They are. We don't talk about our sales because we're still.
That's why I didn't directly ask you. Asked you.
Yeah, we every year we're seeing a year-over-year multiple growth, and that for us is incredible. We're up to about 38 people on our team on our staff.
Good for you.
And we even have our own plants. We actually manufacture at our own facility in Michigan, and we have one in Utah as well.
So what goes into making the water that goes inside of it?
Super simple. We do reverse osmosis, and then it goes through a carbon filter process. We even do UV, which is like yet just another step to make sure there's no bacteria or anything like that in it. But we purposefully weren't one of the luxury waters. We're not from an island somewhere shipping it really far. We're not from the French Alps or something like that. We wanted to be able to have as many filling facilities as close as to the consumer as possible so that we were shipping a filled box of water the least distance.
Interesting. Do you ever get like, oh, this water tastes different, or this water tastes, you know, like for instance, some of the competitors have a, you know, they claim a distinctive.
Yeah.
flavor, but water is kind of water.
Isn't it funny? Like, I learned so much about water. We don't have enough time, unfortunately, to talk about that. But I learned more. You know, we're going for the most simplistic, neutral flavor possible. And it's funny. It's water. But some of the other ones do market. You know, the spring waters have a lot of... or the Fiji, for example, has a lot of silica in it. Which
I was going to mention that, but I didn't want to offend you by bringing up a competitor. But they do have a silica. And there is a little bit of a...
I call it a mouthfeel.
Yes, there's a mouthfeel. It's like a coating almost, like a silicone-ish type of coating.
Yeah, and we weren't after that. We wanted something just, we're priced in the mid-market. We're not a luxury water, like I said, so we want to be accessible to everybody, and we want to appeal to everyone's taste.
How many ounces is this?
That's
this is
500 milliliters, 16.9 ounces.
And what is the cost on this?
You'll see it in the stores for anywhere between about $1.29 to about $1.69.
It's very reasonable.
Yeah, that's what we hope.
Does it stay any cooler?
I can't say that. It might, but I that's not necessarily a selling point for us.
Got it. What's the next step for you guys?
Well, you know, it's been incredible. Even since we started the company and there was just two of us and we had no idea what we were doing, we continue to get just an immense amount of emails, both here in the United States as well as internationally, people saying, I can't get it at my local store yet. And we're getting better and better at that every month. But to us, until we have it accessible to absolutely everybody, we've got a road ahead of us. So,
well, I'm getting some questions here on our little chat line here. Mm-hmm. They want to know what the source of the water. You mentioned how you process it, but what? And you mentioned it's local. You mentioned it's local, but where? How?
Yeah. So in Michigan, where we fill it, that's in Holland, Michigan. It's municipal water. Municipal, i.e. tap. It's from the actual municipal source of water, which we pay for, and then it goes through our filtration process. And some people go, wait, you're selling tap water. Now, the reality is a lot of what we're buying in this convenience market, because packaged water is a convenience market, is usually municipal. But that allows us to never have to, if our business grows and we're not constantly shipping water all over the world, we're able to do filling facilities right next to the consumer.
Interesting. One could say, oh, it's just like kind of the water I'm drinking out of the tap. But the process of what you do to the water is what really is the difference in the water.
As well as the packaging and how we manage our supply chain.
All right. Unfortunately, we're running out of time. What's that, son? You want to say something?
No,
he doesn't. He just wants to say goodbye to everybody. No, can you hold on once? My son's whispering in my ears. I'm trying to close out the show here. Yeah, isn't it great? This is what I do. I have like my child on my arm.
It's so great.
You like that? Right. Thank you. I appreciate it, Ben. And you know what? I think you're great, man. And I love to see entrepreneurs starting up and doing something amazing and it working for you, man. That's huge. Kudos to you.
Thanks for having us on. All this stuff helps us a ton.
For sure. And how can people find out more information?
On all social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, it's just @boxedwater. And then boxedwaterisbetter.com.